Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the iPro Clinic Strategies to Improve Patient Outcome conference call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we'll conduct a question-and-answer session, and instructions will follow at that time. If anyone should require assistance during the conference, please press star then zero on your touch-tone telephone. As a reminder, this conference call is being recorded. I'd now like to introduce today's host for today's conference, Ms. Sarah Butterfield. Ms. Butterfield, you may now begin the conference.
Thank you very much, and good morning, everyone. Welcome to this session of the iPro Educational Teleconference Series, and this is part of our series of educational offerings that address the clinical strategies and organizational culture change strategies that target improvement in patient care management, and again, targeting the home health provider setting. Today's call will be a shared learning session, and we have presentations that will be provided by two of our New York State home health providers, and they're going to be sharing the work that they are involved in related to improvement in patient care transitions between healthcare settings. And we know from our discussions with all of you and the feedback that has been provided by all of the home health providers nationally that the issue of care transitions, in addition to the other topic area of improved communication with physicians that we discussed on our October 10th teleconference call, are really two of the more challenging areas that are impacting the reduction of avoidable acute care hospitalizations. So we're very excited about this morning's presentation. We have covered the topic area of care transitions on some of our previous teleconference presentations, but this morning you're going to hear the successes and challenges that have been experienced firsthand by the agencies from your peer group. We're also very pleased to have as our speakers this morning Sandy Harl, and Sandy is the Director of Patient Services from WellCare Home Health Care in Chautauqua County, and Ann Reynolds, and Ann is the Assistant Director of Nursing from Washington County Public Health Service. Those of you who registered for today's call should have received via email the copy of the slides that Sandy is going to reference and also a program evaluation form. And if you didn't register and you don't have a copy of those slides in front of you, you can visit the iPro website, www.ipro.org. And if you go to the home health section, in the home health section, go to the upcoming event section, and you'll see a link for today's presentation with today's date, and with that link will be the slides and the evaluation form for today. As Cherise mentioned, the teleconference call is being taped, and it'll be posted to the home health section of our website, this time under the past events section, and it'll make it available for future review if you have any other staff within the agency that would like to listen to it. All of your lines are currently muted, but following each of the presentations, we're going to be opening those lines up for your questions and comments and some further discussion with the presenters. We are very honored to have, as I mentioned, two of our New York State providers speaking on today's call. And our first presenter is going to be Sandy Harl, and Sandy is the Director of Patient Services from WellCare in Chautauqua County. Sandy's agency is involved in the Community Health Foundation of Western and Central New York Collaborative that addresses transitions of care for the frail elderly. And our iPro Home Health Project team feels very fortunate also to have Chris Stiegel and Vicki Agrimani from our team serving as facilitators for that project. Sandy is going to share the work that her agency is engaged in and as well as in her experiences in that collaborative with you this morning. And with that, Sandy, I'll turn the call over to you.
Thank you. I was really honored to be able to speak to this group today. So good morning, and I'll tell you a little bit about how this has come about. Many of us struggle with the difficulty of those folks who are admitted and readmitted to the hospital and need the transitions of care and increased communication between agencies. So about a year ago, Chautauqua County WellCare was approached by Chautauqua County Hospice to join in the request to improve transitions of care for the frail elderly of Chautauqua County. Both of our agencies regularly refer to each other and have had a great relationship to expedite timely and appropriate care for our patients. This collaborative relationship led to the application for the Community Health Foundation grant. With the Transitions of Care Collaborative, the overall grant, goal is to improve quality of life by reducing patient symptoms of their illness and to improve patients' functional status. By decreasing the symptoms of their illness, the result should result in decreasing acute care hospitalization and keep those folks at home where they would really like to be. With the Transitions of Care Collaborative grant application, at the time of applying for the grant, each team was to choose one of five options for the team project. Due to our agency involvement and current practice, the option chosen was to reduce transfer error and or delay of treatment, to know and follow patient preferences, and to provide accurate and timely information that matches care needs with the care setting. We chose that because I think that we were already doing that the best we could between the agencies and saw that as something we could continue to improve. Our overall team goal in choosing our target population were identified through our group effort. There were three people that were chosen to be leaders with the collaborative agency, which is WillCare, and three people that were chosen that were leaders within the Chautauqua County Hospice. We identified the target population of frail elderly with a diagnosis of congestive heart failure and or COPD with a history of frequent rehospitalization. Our overall team goal is to decrease emergency department visits and unplanned emergent hospitalization admissions by 30%. We found during that time that the goal was a bit overzealous and needed to really kind of hone in and decrease that amount so that we could reach our target goal and really look at decreasing the hospitalization and acute care for those folks and keep them at home. With looking at our goals, we had to look at what our aims were and then how to align the tasks that would go with our aims and goals. And our overall team goal and aims was, number one, to increase staff education of all disciplines. We had meetings at for both of our agencies that educated all levels of staff, from home health aide to our therapy staff, PT, OT, speech, and all of our case managing nurses and per diem staff. We wanted to increase their knowledge of reportable signs and symptoms of the disease process of congestive heart failure and COPD. And we also wanted to educate both agencies about our function and the things that we can do for our community. It was an eye-opener to find out that there was different levels of staff that didn't know the basic signs and symptoms of the disease process. The next aim was to look at retention of that knowledge of the disease process. Each one of these steps was documented by pre- and post-testing. Another aim was, and still is, of course, for the staff to educate patients and patient caregivers of reportable signs and symptoms of the management of congestive heart failure and COPD in the home setting. We found that not only did we want to decrease acute care hospitalization, we wanted to make sure that those folks could have increased quality of life and develop a tool for measurement of quality of life. And we also found, like, simpler is better if we could ask a few questions and have the patient have input about what their goal is just so important, and not measure what the clinician's goal is. And as I said, in order to reach the aims of the specific tasks needed to be completed by each team. With task one, which was to increase staff knowledge, there was an educational presentation to all staff of both agencies, as I mentioned before. A pretest was given prior to the presentation, plotted by a graph, and after the presentation, a post-test was given. Graphed and presented. With the second aim, which had to do with looking at retention of knowledge of staff, 2 weeks later, we gave an additional post-test to measure retention. And the results came out very positive as far as the retention of information. The same test was given for pre, post, and the 2 week post test. For aim number three, which was to educate the patient and the caregiver, the team developed a educational tool in the form of a handout. The handout was instructed to the patient and or caregiver, or both, the signs and symptoms of congestive heart failure and or COPD. The teaching tool also included identification of reportable signs of disease process and list the agency individual to call with the signs and symptoms. That was an effort to decrease rehospitalization and to be able to intervene when those symptoms were occurring. A pretest and post-test measurement tool was developed and delivered to the chosen patient population. The results of the testing were also placed on the graph. In order to reach the aim-specific test needed to be completed by the team, we also had aim 4, which is a tool to be developed to measure quality of life. And this tool we developed within the past month, and we will be delivering it to all of our chchosen patients starting November 1st, which is coming up very soon, next week. Our team assumption of our group is, of course, that increased knowledge will empower the patients and their caregivers so that they can have information to manage their care, and the result would be to decrease rehospitalization and decrease emergency department visits. And, of course, the most important thing is for them to feel better. This experience being a part of the Community Health Foundation collaborative grant has just really opened our eyes to focusing on the patients, the problem, and the solution. Our team has met the past 6 months to develop the educational tools and measurement tools targeting on reducing transfer error to provide accurate and timely information to match care needs with a care setting. What we've learned through this is we chose one option, which was to decrease transfer error, to increase information, to look at the setting being appropriate for our patients. But one of the options for the collaborative venture was to develop a transition coach role to conduct follow-up visits and phone calls to provide continuity across the transition. And, of course, there were several groups that chose that. I think 8 out of the 13 groups with this grant chose transition coach development. And we are finding that we really need to look at developing that coach role within our group as well. We have home care liaisons that go to our local hospitals, skilled nursing facilities, and doctor's offices, and we are planning to use our liaisons to join the transition coach training that's scheduled for April of 2008 as a part of the collaborative. And I know that Chautauqua County Hospice has a support program for people, and the person who is in charge of that, Erin, has already gone through the transition coach training and will be taking on that role. The plan is for those folks with this diagnosis to have contact with a liaison when they're in the hospital, if that's their setting, and then have contact with that coach within 72 hours, making sure the connections are happening, and then 2 weeks after that. We're also looking at the development of a personal medical history for that patient, patient involvement within making sure that their personal medical history is done, can take that information to their doctor's visits, share it with clinicians that come to their house, update their medication, perhaps even make notes ahead of time, making sure that they don't forget to give information to their physician. So we're really excited about expanding that role. We've been very excited to be a part of the collaborative to improve transitions of care for our patient population and to be an example for our community. We're also committed to continue this improvement of delay of service for our frail elderly beyond the time of the grant program, since we'll be using existing staff to take on this new role. Challenges have been really pretty interesting. We are looking for continued commitment from our agency administration, although I must say that I think that we have been supported quite well by Will Cares administration. We also have had a hard time taking those baby steps in looking at our goals. We want to take that quantum leap to reach our main goal. And we have really needed to just kind of step back, look at revising our percentage goal, and go from there. Another challenge has been a lot of our physicians are used to getting a call from our nurse and saying, send them to the emergency room. So increasing that knowledge within our community is going to be so important, and try to manage these folks at home and give them better quality of life and improved health. I think another challenge has been to identify those risk factors for our folks, as we have a part of our assessment that includes risk factors, and encourage our clinicians to top-load visits in the first few weeks of their home stay after hospitalization, and to try to keep our folks on longer service and even lengthening out our frequency at the end, and look at measuring to assess for signs and symptoms, and let the patient know that they can call us even if we're not scheduled for a visit to let us know about those signs. Another challenge has been our need to find somebody to help us with statistical compilation and graph plotting. That has been one of our challenges, looking at our outcomes. It's been really helpful to engage our knowledgeable, willing, and motivated people. Our staff people have been very willing to go out and do the extra teaching with our pamphlet to educate our patients and caregivers. During the past 6 months, our team members have become more actively involved. We've added an extra person coming to the collaborative meetings for education, and we have a commitment to meet regularly to work on our tasks and revise our tasks as necessary. Our team has decided to have a phone conference every week to look at our tasks and revise them as needed, and that's one thing I found, that in home care, things always change, and learning to shift and revise has been just something we've had to do always. Another thing that's been very helpful, the teaching of Eric Coleman and looking at the four pillars, have been instrumental in helping our team refocus our efforts, looking at the patient's medication self-management, patient-centered health record that we're going to be incorporating, follow-up with primary care physician and specialist, making sure that those things are happening or we're instructing them to do so, and knowledge of those red flag warning symptoms and how to respond. Thank you very much for including me, and I guess that is it for my presentation. Thank you, Sarah. I'm handing it back over to you.
Thanks so much, Sandy. And I'm going to ask Charisse if she would like to open up the lines and explain to you how you can answer or ask some questions.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you. If you have a question at this time, please press the 1 key on your touch-tone telephone. If your question has been answered or you wish to remove yourself from the queue, please press the pound key. Again, if you have a question at this time, please press the 1 key on your touch-tone telephone. One moment, please.
While we're waiting for Charisse to queue up the first question, Cindy, can you just talk about what are the types of disciplines that are on your team from each of the two organizations?
The team people?
Yeah.
We have myself and Lisa Lieber, who is one of our supervisors, and Donna Stanley is our home care liaison that is a part of the WheelCare collaborative part of the team. For Chautauqua County Hospice, Erin Gakin is in charge of the Family Support Program, which is now called Connections. Shauna Anderson, who is Vice President of Hospice, and Tom Somerville, who is, I believe, he works in the field, does QA, does staff education for hospice. And into that, we've, of course, been involving more and more staff within both agencies for the teaching and collaborative information for the program.
It's like you have the senior leadership support also
yes.
to allow for the staff to be involved and to allow you the time
correct.
Involved in the collaborative, which is excellent.
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted to, for those of you who may not know who Dr. Eric Coleman is, he is what we consider the guru of care transitions. And he's involved, as Sandy mentioned, in the Community Health Foundation Collaborative as one of the facilitators. If you are not familiar with his work, he has done studies and research on care transitions. And Dr. Coleman is the Associate Professor of Medicine within the Divisions of Healthcare Policy and Research at the University of Colorado in Denver. And he is the director of the Care Transitions Program, and their aim is to improve quality and safety during care handoffs across care settings. I would recommend you visit the Care Transitions website because there's some excellent information there. The website address is www.caretransitions.org. That brings you to the Care Transitions program on their website. And there's everything from articles to definitions to vignettes and video clips. There's examples of different interventions that have been tried. There's measurements and toolkits posted there for both practitioners and caregivers. And he also has information on the national agenda because he's also working collaboratively with CMS on the whole issue of care transitions. So again, the website is www.caretransitions.org, and definitely would recommend visiting that site. With that, Charisse, do we have any questions?
Yes, we do have a question from Vanessa Soto from Grilling Healthcare. Your line is open.
Hi, Vanessa. Vanessa?
Your phone may be muted.
Okay. Can you hear us now?
Yes.
Okay. We'd like to find out, are there any social workers involved in your study?
The social workers have been instructed in the education piece, and actually Erin Gakin, who is our team leader, is a social worker. So
okay.
Absolutely.
Thank you. Okay.
Again, if you have a question?
If you have a question at this time, please press the 1 key on your touch-tone telephone. Ms. Butterfield, I show no questions, ma'am.
Okay. I also wanted to bring out one other point that you had shared, Sandy, that I thought was interesting. When you did the staff training on CHF and COPD, and we hear this from a lot of the agencies that are doing training, sometimes we have the assumption that everybody has the same level of knowledge, especially those two specific diagnoses because they're so common. And especially at all levels of staff, that we have, you know, brand new nurses coming in, nurses with limited experience, nurses with years of experience, that it just makes sense to do training to bring everybody onto the same page.
Right.
So, and I think that's excellent example. Just briefly, not, you know, in a lot of depth, but what types of things did you include in those educational training sessions for them, for instance, related to CHF and COPD?
We really looked at the disease process and what it means and whether they're primary diagnosis or secondary, and the symptoms and signs that were given and the kind of things to report. It's almost like most of the education was the same, whether it was the staff person or the patient or caregiver, so that everyone was on the same page. I was surprised to note that I feel that our therapists, our occupational therapists and physical therapists, were most verbal about being glad to learn the signs and symptoms, and they weren't aware.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I think it's difficult for people to step forward and say, I don't know this. And the fact that you, without questions asked, provided the training to all of your staff is excellent.
Right, including those home health aides that are with the patients a lot of time.
Exactly. And it's interesting because that particular intervention, education of staff at all levels, was one of the interventions in the HHQI campaign that was instrumental in improving physician relationships and physician communication, educating the staff on the state-of-the-art best practice guidelines and exactly what you did, so that they have a better comfort level in talking with the physician on those particular diagnoses.
Right.
It's interesting that it maps to both. So that's excellent. And, Charisse, are we any more questions?
Not at this time.
Great. Thank you so much, Sandy, for sharing that information.
You're welcome. Thank you.
You're welcome. And with that, I would like to introduce our second presenter, and that is Ann Reynolds, and Ann is the Assistant Director of Nursing from Washington County Public Health Service. And Ann is going to share information on the innovative program that their agency is involved in, again, targeting improved care management and communication between healthcare settings, again, focusing on the transition of the care of the patient back and forth across the provider settings. With that, Ann, I'll turn the call over to you.
Thank you, Sarah. I thought I should start out with who Washington County Public Health and Hospice is. I'm not sure if you're aware where we are or what we do here. But we are a sole provider in Washington County, which is upstate New York on the Vermont border, close to Canada. We're not on the Canadian border. There are a few counties north of us. And Lake George also borders on our western side. So we have a very long, thin county. We're about 40 miles, 45 miles wide and about 65, 70 miles long. And in that large geographic area, we have about 64,000 people living. So we're quite rural. We don't really have a large city population anywhere. I think our biggest town has about 10,000 people in it. We, as I said, we are the sole provider for CHA services, long-term services, and hospice services. So we have the transitions across our teams within our agency, which I think makes it very nice for us. But what we see a problem with is our someone getting into the system here. And that's why we wanted to look at using a liaison at the local hospital where we get about 50% of our referrals from. There were a lot of reasons for us to get involved in the hospital. The REACH initiative, we've been looking at trying to reduce our acute care hospitalizations, especially for COPD and CHF populations. Those are our target populations for that initiative. We were not receiving an accurate list of meds on discharge, which really created a lot of complications, which then added to the rehospitalizations. We also wanted to, I'm sure any of you know with your long-term care population or your CHA PCA population, a lot of those patients are non-compliant. They're long-term non-compliant. So we wanted to have a little bit of extra lead time, basically, to set up a case conference for the caregivers and the patient before they went home to let them know and maybe establish a contract, or maybe it was just to establish caregivers, backup caregivers. And finally, the local hospital was looking at having some managed Medicare insurance companies come in as liaisons, and we were concerned we might lose some of our referrals. And being that we're the sole provider in the area, it's costly for us to provide services because we take every referral that comes through our door, and we need volume in order to stay financially stable. So those were the reasons we wanted to get involved in the liaison program. Our goals were to improve the quality of the information that we received from the hospital. We wanted to be able to assess the previously seen patients, so those patients that had been a patient of ours before. We wanted to focus in on our high-risk populations, our wound patients, our IV patients, and those identified at risk for rehospitalization using our tool that we had developed for the REACH initiative. Another goal we had was to improve our patient outcomes by decreasing the number of rehospitalizations. We felt we could increase our level of compliance by having a case conference or by obtaining a set of parameters to utilize with our telehealth monitoring for the high-risk populations of CHF and COPD. And we also wanted to be able to get standing orders for the results for our telehealth that were outside the parameters. And in talking with the local hospital, they really didn't feel that their case managers had time to get that for us. And they didn't think it would be possible because they didn't see that the doctors would be all that cooperative. And our final goal was to educate the case managers at the hospital, the physicians, and patients about the services we have at Washington County and to maintain our volume of referrals. So we actually placed a person in mid-June. So I didn't start really tallying up any statistics or anything like that till July. She is an advanced practice nurse with 20 years of experience in home care from several counties throughout New York State. She just moved here recently. So far as we're moving in, the quality of our information has improved. We get an accurate med list, which is great. I think we might get that anyway because of the hospital's initiative to have the med reconciliation for JCO accreditation. We just weren't getting it before. All of our referrals for wound patients and IV patients do have physician signatures on them when we receive them, and that had been an issue in the past. We were chasing signatures. And we do also know for those high-risk patients, daily dressings or IV patients, we do have identified someone who will be the backup caregiver, so someone who will meet us on the first visit to learn the pump and IV flush or whatever has to be learned, or the wound care. Our rehospitalization rate, unfortunately, has increased. We went down when we started with REACH from 29% to 26.5%, and right now we're teetering around 30, 31, which we're not happy with. We really can't, I guess we can't do anything about it right this minute. We had a huge rehospitalization rate in our COPD population. I'm not sure if it was the weather we had this summer or what it was, but we really have found that our liaison is not really able to look at our high-risk populations. She's basically been placed as another case manager for the hospital, and she takes everything coming in from Washington County to Washington County, and she doesn't get any more lead time from the physician about a discharge like we thought she would, and that kind of stuff. So I'm not sure that we're seeing any improvements in that area where we could hit on decreasing those rehospitalizations. And our third goal was to provide education and possibly do some case finding and increase our volume of referrals. And we've maintained our volume, but we really haven't had time to case find or anything like that. So 3 months in, we have a meeting scheduled with the hospital staff next week. And what we're talking about here, we haven't presented to the hospital yet, but where we'd like to go, since we've reviewed those patients that have gone in and out of the hospital frequently, we've looked at them and we've identified that they belong to the long-term care program or the CHOP-PCA program. So what we're looking at is, rather than having the liaison physically stationed at the hospital, perhaps pulling her back to the office here and working with the long-term population and our CHOP-PCA population and establishing a telehealth, but also maybe some telemonitoring. Some people aren't compliant or physically capable or mentally capable of managing the telehealth equipment, but if we had phone calls going into that population on a regular basis, we saw that the CHOP-PCA or the long-term patients, we'd have made a nursing visit and we'd have documented that everything was fine. But generally speaking, we see those people quite less frequently than a CHOP patient. So something would happen in between nursing visits. And rather than calling us at the office, they would call the doctor and they'd be in the hospital. And I'm sure you've all experienced calling doctor's offices. You don't get a response right away, or by the time you do get a response, your symptoms have gotten that much worse and you do require hospitalization. So what we're hoping is that we'll be able to utilize our liaison as, and maybe I see her as a liaison still, but within the community more, working with this specific group of patients and working with those doctors and preventing hospitalizations. As I said, she's an advanced practice nurse. She is a family nurse practitioner. So I'm hopeful that her assessments will be more well-received by the physician offices. We're also working with the physician offices to establish a format where they will know that this is a high-risk patient and we need a response within 2 hours. So I think they'll maybe respond more to her because of her advanced practice and because they're having some say in what we're looking at doing for a form to send to them and alert them that this is an issue. I think I've got a lot of hopes. and I think we have made some inroads, but I think we've got a ways to go at this point, too. So I guess that's it for now, unless you have questions.
Okay, Ann, thanks so much. I'm going to ask Charisse again to queue up the lines to see if any of you have questions for Ann.
Thank you. Again, if you have a question at this time, please press the 1 key on your touch-tone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the queue, please press the pound key. A moment, please.
Well, we're waiting for the first question. And how did you do anything up front in meeting with the hospital before you put the advanced practice nurse in?
Yes, we had actually had several meetings where we had talked with the director of case management, and she had let us know that their case management team just did not have time to do a decent job. Well, she didn't put it in those words, but didn't have time to spend on getting us all the information we needed. And I guess she felt she realized that. And then she was looking at utilizing managed care case managers as a discharge planner, so to speak, for those particular patients. And our concern, as was the other counties in the area, that we were going to lose referrals at that point. So that's why we decided talking about utilizing someone from our staff to do that.
And you've definitely had some successes here. I know from a meeting I was at with the supervisors last week, from a bunch of counties, that the information exchange and especially the physician signature on all the referrals, as well as the primary care physician even knowing that the patient's coming out if there was a hospitalist involved.
Right.
That they're coming out to the community and being able to get them to pick up. I mean, those two alone are like a monumental improvement that you've been able to achieve.
Yeah, and actually the other thing I forgot about was we've been able to, when it is a hospitalist, we've been able to get the patient scheduled with their follow-up physician in the community within a reasonable time frame rather than leaving it to the patient and being 4 weeks out. So that's been good, too.
Do you think there's any opportunity in the advanced practice nurse being able to provide some guidance to the case managers that are there? Do you think that there's some benefit to any education there of how she's able to achieve that?
That's a great idea. We can certainly talk to Chris about that next week. I just see that they're so busy that they don't even really congregate in the same area at any given time. They have a weekly staff meeting, so maybe we could, you know, at that point in time get to them. But generally speaking, everybody's scattered throughout the hospital when running physically.
Right. Well, that's excellent. And I thank you for sharing both the ups and the downs and your hopes and dreams there with us. Charisse, can I open the line, see if there's any questions?
We do have a question from Diane Azone from Greene County Public. Diane, your line is open.
Hi, Diane.
Hi, can you hear me?
You can.
Okay. This is Margie from Greene County Public Health. And this is actually a question back for Sandy, but maybe Ann can address it as well. Could you give us some idea of what types of interventions that could be done in the home versus sending somebody to the hospital, especially with, you know, the breathing problems, things like that? What would they feel would be a comfort level of caring for the patient in their home?
Want me to answer that, Ann?
Sure.
Okay. Of course, it depends on the severity of the person's disease. We don't want somebody to be at high risk at home for a significant event, but teaching the patients to look ahead for those signs and symptoms before they have to be hospitalized, we can look at intervening with the physician, change of medication, increasing a diuretic, looking at possibly some intervention for the COPD people of nebulizer treatments or a change of medication. We also have a pretty strong IV team here in our county, and I think a big thing is educating our medical community to know what home care can do in the home setting that is safe for the patients. So those are some of the things that we can do in the patient's home.
And I think we've used our telehealth with our COPD patients. They come, it has an oximeter, and we've trained the patient that if they're feeling anxious or feeling short of breath, to check their pulse oximetry. And, you know, we talk to them about what's an acceptable level for them, and also talked about rescue inhalers or nebulizer treatments, those kinds of things. If their pulse oximetry is okay, are they anxious, being able to, you know, evaluate what's going on, teaching them some pursed lip breathing, and then anti-anxiety meds. A lot of them have anxiety issues, so making sure they're taking those pills. They have incentive spirometers, so we have them take some slow, deep breaths with the incentive spirometer, and they can watch their pulse oximetry then. That's really been effective in keeping people out of the hospital. Unfortunately, my numbers don't show that, but we've actually worn batteries out of our pulse oximeters with a lot of our COPDers because they're always checking it. So I think having that pulse oximeter is kind of like a security blanket for them.
Mm-hmm. And I think, too, as both of you mentioned, the involvement of all the disciplines that are in there, especially the home health aide, in knowing when to look for the signs in some of those interventions that you mentioned, and being able to communicate that to the agency, to the nurse, is very important. Okay. Any other questions, Charisse?
There are no further questions at this time.
Okay, excellent. Thank you so much, Ann and Sandy, for sharing all that information. And if any of you do have questions that you don't feel comfortable asking, if you want to email me, I'll be more than happy to forward them to Ann and to Sandy for them to respond. I certainly appreciate them sharing their information and their trials. I should have mentioned that both of these agencies are part of our identified participant group agencies for the ACE scope of work, and that means that their organizations volunteer to be part of a group of agencies that we work with more closely with support. They volunteered way back in the ACE scope of work as we opened it up to all of the agencies in New York State. Both of these agencies volunteered to participate, and we're very proud of their accomplishments, and we thank them for sharing their expertise on today's call. I want to remind you that our next conference call is scheduled for Wednesday, November 14th, and that will be focused on the Home Health Quality Improvement Campaign topic area of the month, which is fall prevention, which is important to all types of agencies across the state. So I encourage you to join us for that call. In addition to that, I would encourage you to fill out those evaluations that we provided to you today, because we take that information and your feedback very seriously. And I thank you for your interest and participation and your time joining us for today's call. And with that, Sharice, I think we'll end today's presentation.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for participating in today's conference. This concludes your program. You may now disconnect and have a great day.